Blog Talk Radio. And welcome to the Brownstone on the Voices of Hope Radio Network. I am your host, Tracy B, and I will be rocking that mic tonight with content that is empowering, inspiring, and transforming. So grab your favorite beverage, find your favorite chair, and join the conversation here at the Brownstone.
Women have always been on the front lines for social justice.
It's what we do.
We organize, make phone calls,
and yes,
we run for office,
all while being fly.
We stand up
to systemic racism,
fight for health care
and justice
for all our citizens,
and use our power,
our rights,
our responsibility.
Black women,
let's vote.
Vote, vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Your turn, fellas.
Okay.
We got this.
Fellas. Brothers.
We've heard our sisters,
our mothers, our wives and daughters cry out for equality.
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 All across this country. And now it's our turn.
Our responsibility.
To take our power back.
Black women vote more than black men.
And it's time we change that.
Don't give your power away.
Every single vote counts in this election.
Show up.
Show out.
And vote
for Joe Biden
and Kamala Harris.
That's right. Show up and show out. Make sure that you vote on November the 3rd. Make sure that your box, if you're not going to the polls, that your ballot is in the mailbox on time, because we need a change in our world today. Welcome back to the Brownstone. And like I said, I am Tracy B, and I'm going to be rocking that mic tonight with content that is empowering, inspiring, and transforming. So I hope that you grab your beverage. And I hope that you're sitting in that favorite chair. But while you're doing that, let me ask you this. Do you love to read? If you're like me, I love reading books. And if that's you, I want to take this opportunity to thank one of our sponsors, the Sister of Literature Book Club, for sponsoring us. But I also want to take this time to invite you to join them, as each and every month they come together to read an inspiring, interesting book and discuss about it. So, simply connect with them on Facebook as Sisters of Literature Book Club. All right. Tonight, I am excited and glad to have our first guest on the show tonight. You guys know that I'm always just interested to talk to people and find out a little bit about them. So tonight in the Brownstone, the first time here, so you know I can't wait to see what she thinks about the Brownstone, about really being here and you know, at the Brownstone, you know how we do it. So tonight we would like to welcome Felicia Harris, the author of The Making of Me. So Felicia, are you on the line? Are you in the Brownstone? What's going on? How are you?
I'm right here with you. I'm rocking with you tonight.
Right.
I got my drink. I got my spot. I'm here.
All right, that's what I'm talking about. Nothing like a good beverage. And not only that, you know, I got to give a shout out to the owner of that beat. You know, my boo thing, he created that beat just for the Brownstone. And let me tell you, he did a marvelous job because it makes you sit back, relax, and want to know what's happening at the Brownstone. But Felicia, you know, we're here to talk about the making of me. But before we get into that, you know, I got to ask you a couple of questions, right? You
no
know,
problem.
I always I got to ask you a couple of questions. But I wanted to know, you know, for the listening audience and those aspiring authors and that's out there, when did you first realize that you wanted to be a writer? When did you first realize that you wanted? Yeah, when did you first realize?
Well, I wrote from when I was little. When I was younger, I started out writing in journals a lot. I used to get teased in school, so my way of releasing what I felt and my feelings was writing. So my mother brought me a little plastic suitcase, briefcase thing, and she just knew I liked to write, so I would put all my papers in there, and I used to just write. So growing up, it was journals, short stories, poems, love letters for friends. It was all of that. So I just used to love to write. I had a love of writing. And then I didn't know growing up I would be a writer, but this is what it led to.
Wow. You know what? For me, I love journals. It's a great way, like you said,
mm-hmm.
to release and to keep your thoughts. And the good thing about it, especially if you got one of them ones that's called a prayer journal, it's good to look
mm-hmm.
back on the pages sometime and see how much
yes.
God has blessed us, how much he had did for us, done for us
mm-hmm.
so much. So I wanted to also ask you, what life experience have helped shape your writing the most?
I would say getting it out, like being able to express yourself on paper is different from verbal. I express myself better on paper. Like I asked my husband the other day, we had a question and it said, how do you show love? And he said, well, you don't show much emotion. He was like, you show it in a letter. He was like, give you a piece of paper and a pen, you'll write it. So I'm very good at writing, like expressing myself on paper. So I guess when it came to writing the book, I just expressed what I was feeling, what I wanted to know, and what I wanted to share. So however you are comfortable expressing yourself, like I won't have a debate with somebody because I can't express myself verbally very well. But I'll write it down in a long bunch of papers. I'll write it down what I'm feeling, and I can express myself on paper, but not verbally. So I guess writing, it just comes naturally to me because I'm letting it all out. I'm letting out what I feel, and I do it better on paper than I do verbally.
All right. Some of us really take that to heart. Instead of saying what's on our mind, sometimes we probably need to write it down. That probably was
yeah.
Let me try to write it down instead of being so mm-hmm. expressive about it. But I guess those love letters is for your boo, right? For your husband. That's
right.
How you express your love. You wrote the letters
exactly.
to him, so he was getting the love letters
exactly.
and the cute little notes. So now being this author and being that, so what are some of your favorite authors?
Oh, well, oh, man. I've read a lot of, I read Moby Dick. I didn't have a favorite author growing up. Reading really came to me when I met my husband, I'm sorry, and he was reading the Elin Harris series. And I'm like, you're reading mm-hmm. this? And he was like, yeah. And I was just surprised because, you know, it was about gay relationships. So that started me into reading. I met him. He was reading that. And I started reading. And I would just read whatever was put in front of me. I didn't have a favorite author, per se, to be honest with you. I don't have a favorite author. I just read I just enjoyed reading. And I read whatever was in front of me. I don't have a favorite author. I just love to read books. But now I notice as I'm getting older, I'm more about writing than I am reading. So I don't give myself a lot of time to sit back and read a book. I bought Michelle Obama's book. I bought all these books, but I'm not reading them. I'm not giving myself time to read them. But I
mm-hmm.
feel like now I enjoy writing more than I do reading now.
Okay, so of the books that you did read, what was kind of your favorite mystery, the romances? What's your favorite genre of the ones that you did read?
To be honest, the ghetto mm-hmm. drama books, those books, the storytelling books, to be honest, those are the books that I can feel like I can relate to and I can envision. I don't like romances, but I like those books that come from authors like me, that I feel like I can picture it. Like, I can picture the train. I can picture the scene. I can picture Harlem. I can picture it happening in the Bronx. If it's relatable, then I enjoy reading it more. So I would say those type of books, dramas. I love
dramas.
What?
And I laugh because he said, oh, what a trashy. Well, you know, the type, those type of books, those books that I can relate to.
Honest.
And that's what,
it's okay.
And so a lot of times I think that that's what we do. Those books that we enjoy, we can read for hours. Like, we can start at 12 and it may be 8. You can sit back because you can actually visualize the story. And I always find those books very interesting, and I always think that that person that wrote that book is very good and very detailed in what they do, because I feel like
exactly.
I'm right there in the story. So let's talk about this real quick. So what inspired you to write this book, The Making of Me? And I know that it is an adult keepsake book, but something had to inspire you to do that.
I'm sorry I keep bringing up my husband, but we've been together for 20 years, so he plays a big impact in a lot of the things that go on here. But one day he told me, we were getting ready for work, and he told me he wished I had more details about his mother's life. His mom passed away when he was younger from sarcoidosis. So now, growing up as an older man, he's looking around trying to find more information about her, and there is none. He has the baby books that his cousin gave him, but that only tells him about him and his twin brother, about them when they were babies. So he doesn't have any facts, any information about his mom, unless you go to someone and they tell you a story, but they don't have any details. So he's like, he talks about his mother all the time, so I told him I quite don't understand what he meant by that, because he talks about his mother nonstop. And he has all these great stories, and he said, yeah, I have memories, but I don't have any information. Like, it's just stuff that didn't come up in conversation when he was younger. So what I did was I asked him more about it. He went on to explain the details and what he felt like he was missing. And that day I went to work and I said, well, I don't want my son to grow up and have fill that same void. So what am I going to do? So me being the writer, I have like all these notebooks around the house. I said, I'm going to get a book, one for him, one for me, a black and white notebook. And we're going to write in stuff that we want our son to know. Put pictures in it with some glue, whatever we have to do. So my son will have the details and the information. And one thing led to another. And I said, if I want to do this for my son, other people will probably want to do it for their kids and so on. So that's how the book came up.
Right. That is so profound, because a lot of times, you know, I happen to have lost my children's baby book in between one of those moves, you know, where life happened and I just lost the book. So I'm always, when you were talking, I was thinking about the, you know, in the olden days, as I called them, the golden days when our parents was living and stuff. You know how you used to always, when you got married, you got that big box. You got that big Bible, and in front of that Bible, it had the family tree. It had pictures. It had all this detailed information. I don't know about anybody else, but I still have one of those big Bibles. And my mother-in-law gave it to me, and I treasure it today. So that Bible carries everything in there. So I do understand where you're coming from. But we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to come back and get back into the details about your book.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Brownstone. And once again, we're here on the Voices of Hope Radio Network. And it's your girl, Tracy B. And today I'm joined by Felicia Harrison, the author of The Making of Me. And I say, Felicia, you know, I really love that title, but how did you come up with it?
When I was putting it together, as I'm putting it together and I'm writing the questions, I'm like, you know what? I saved the title for last because I wasn't sure what it was going to be called. And I realized that everything I was asking for in the book, it basically equals the makings of you. So when people see it from a distance, they say the makings of me. And I always have to say when I do, like, vendor events, it's not about me. It's not a book about me. It's about you. And I have to explain the title. When it says the makings of me, that means that everything I'm putting into this book equals the makings of me. And that's what it entails. It entails everything that makes up you. Once you start answering the questions and putting in your information, your details, this is what makes you who you are today, all these things that happened in the past. So that's how I came up with the name of the book.
Right. And so listener audience, I want you to know that it's an adult memory keepsake book that uses to keep all your personal information. It's, you know, it's so creative because, you know, we talked about the Bible and we glad for the Bible and all the verses that comes in there. But sometimes we want to take just that little part of it and take it out so that we can pass it on to our kids, especially if we have more, you know, like three or four kids. You know, everybody can have their own book. Everybody can find their stories. Everybody can get the memories of their parents and their great grandparents as they want. So one part of the book, I'm going to get into the book a little bit. We're going to talk about that. But one page of the book talks about way back when. So I think that when I was going through it, we were talking way back when, and we were looking at the crisis. I think that's that page. And like way back when, what was this when you were born? Right. So I, you know, I just happened to take a look at mine. You know, I was born in 1965. So I went back there, and it talked about that the cost of a new home was $21,500. Wow, we have come a long, long way. You can't even get, I think that's the cost of rent for a whole year right about now.
And
they said that
you
the cost,
wow when you saw it. That's exactly what I was trying to get at, how different things have changed from when you were growing up to when I was growing up. So if you open up this book and you're showing it, say, to your daughter or your son, they're going to say, wow, you only paid this much for a movie ticket. You only paid this much for a slice of pizza. And it just shows them inflation and how different things were. And that will also lead to a conversation. If you do this book with someone else and you say, oh, way back when I was growing up, a slice of pizza cost or a pack of cigarettes cost, it's going to lead to conversation. Why were things so cheap? Well, we only needed this much to go to the store. So it generates more conversation with the person you're filling the book out with.
Right, right. And it was amazing because, you know, I looked at that and I was like, wow, okay, so a stamp was 5 cents. And we know how much a stamp is. I think it's 55 cents. So it's really, you know, 5 cents to 55 cents. We're talking 1965. And then a dozen of eggs was like 53 cents. So I'm like, wow, you know, how prices has changed. And then, you know, I wanted to just really sit back and I think about when I think about the my parents that were born in 1940, I didn't get a chance to really go back and see what their rate, you know, how much a house cost back then. But I can only imagine how much it was. It probably wasn't, you know, we'll be glad to be paying those prices at that time. We'll definitely be glad to be paying those prices. So as we move along in the book, it says one of the things says that life was easier when. That was one of your questions. So I'm asking you, life was easier when?
When I was younger, to be honest, I was always scared to get older. I used to see the Con Edison bills, and I was like, I don't want to look at that when I get older. I don't want to figure out that bill. I don't want those responsibilities. Life was easier when I was young, and these responsibilities didn't exist. I mean, it's getting good. You know, life is good now, but it was easier when I was a kid. And I told my son, you know, don't rush to grow up, you know, enjoy it because it doesn't last forever. Once you get married and you get kids and you get responsibilities, it gets a little more real. So I would say life was easiest when I was younger and life was carefree. That's when life was easiest.
You know what? And I totally agree with that. Life was easy when you was in with your parents, right? It was it was like you didn't have a care in the world. You just had to make sure that you did your chores. You was in the house when the street lights came on. And if they started blinking the light, then you already knew you was in trouble. So life was definitely much easier when we were younger. But once we hit that age of adulthood, 18, 21, whatever it is, and we started getting those own responsibilities, and, you know, it changes. Like you said, life changes. Oh, my, how life changes. So the other one says that no one will ever respect you if.
I say if. No one will ever. What did I write in my book? I have my book around here somewhere. What did I say if you lie. Because to me, once a liar, always a liar. I say if you lie, because I can't, it's going to be hard to believe what you say moving forward. So even though you would like to think it was a small lie or it was a white lie, it's still a lie. Like, why do you feel the need to lie to me? So, and how can I trust that moving forward you won't? So I don't think you'll get much respect if you lie. Like, I know someone who lies, and it's like every time you hear a story, you're like, that just don't make no sense. And so you lose a little bit. They lack respect because that keeps happening. So that's what I'm going to go with. And the other one that you asked, it actually, I'm sorry, when you said it, you rephrased it a little bit. It says, when you said life was easier when. So that was your question. In the book, it says life is easiest when. So it means basically saying, like, you're giving advice. This is a deeper me section where you're giving advice to the person that's reading the book. So when it says life is easiest when, somebody would say life is easiest when you mind your business, or life is easiest when, I really want to stick with,
when you tell, because you don't have to think of another lie to back up another lie and another lie. So yeah, so in the book, that section is mainly for you to give advice based on how you lived your life to the person that's reading this book once you're done.
That's a good question. Life is easier when you're respectful to each other, when you agree to disagree. You know, when you agree to disagree, when you agree for me to go to life is easier when you have a forgiving heart. Because we all make mistakes. Life is easier when. You know, like that's how life is. Like, we don't, and we wonder why we go through some of these challenges sometimes. We need to pick up your book so we can write some things down. So the other question, because truly that's what it is. When you talk about that section is talking about a deeper me, and it is begin to challenge you to look at yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and see what makes things work for you and what didn't work. One of your other questions happens to be the secret of a successful relationship. Now, I can't wait to hear this answer.
I think it's so cliche, but it's true. I mean, I give up. It's true, but communication. Me and my husband have been communicating more than ever recently and in these most recent years, and the relationship has evolved. Because now, even though it's been 20 years, we're more comfortable now talking about other things. Because after the honeymoon phase, things start getting a little more real. So if you can honestly and openly talk to your partner about any and everything, you'll be amazed at how great that relationship becomes. You can honestly just relax and enjoy it because the other person knows you in and out and you know them in and out. So I think the secret to a successful relationship is communication. I used to hate when people said it. I used to hate when they said, oh, I used to like communication, whatever. But now that I'm in it and I realize, yes, it is communication. It is. Because without that, I'm harboring feelings. I'm harboring emotions. I'm harboring wants and needs and all this. And he doesn't know anything about it. But if I communicate that, they're taken care of and they're addressed. So, yeah, I'm going to go with communication because that's what I'm living with now, communication.
And you know what? I'm not going to even follow anything else with that because that is excellent advice that you gave. Communication is the key in all relationships. You know, so mm-hmm. communication is definitely one. So this is a good one. This is a good one. My mother always told me what?
My mother used to always say, you leave together, you come back together. You, me, my sister, and my two cousins, we were always together. And she used to always say, y'all leave together, y'all come back together. So you know how you see in the news sometimes, oh, we went to the party and she left. No, my mother wouldn't have that. How did you leave and everybody else stayed? No, you leave together, you come back together. That was the best advice my mother ever gave me. So we all grew up together. We stayed tight together because we leave together, we come back together. So we stayed tight, me and my cousin and my sister. That was my mother's best advice.
And that's good. But I was telling someone the other day that, you know, my mother would always say, well, you know, we said something like, you just keep living. You're going to go through it. You ain't been through nothing yet. Just keep living. That was one of those, I like to say, those old cliche, cliches on those parents. And you keep living. Mm-hmm. You haven't experienced anything yet. Just keep living. You know, this is not a hard time. You just keep living. So I always remember that. And sometimes I want to tell my kids, look, just keep living. You haven't been through anything yet. Just keep living. You know, and so we think about it, but how much do we mimic our mothers? You know, find myself sometimes saying the stuff that they normally said. So that was just crazy to me. Yeah, of the stages, it's called Ages and Stages. So my question to you is, what has been your most awkward year and why?
Awkward? Probably when I went to high school, because everything, no, all right, awkward, probably when I left my job. When I left my job, that was a big deal. It was a state job, and I decided to leave because things, it just wasn't happy. Like, the dynamics of the job were affecting home. It was affecting my marriage, and I was like, no, it was affecting my health, my mental health, and I was like, no, this is not working out. So that was a big deal because it's like you're taking away an income before you find another income. And I was like, all right. We just wasn't happy. Everybody was stressed. Everybody was suffering because of that. So that was the awkward phase because you're in the secure position where you have a good, great, steady income, but you want to walk away from it to pursue this book full time and to get your peace of mind and to make sure your home is happy. So that was a little awkward, but it ended up working out. So I'm happy in the end that I did make that we made a decision because we made a decision together. You know, I talked to him first. And that ended up being a great decision.
Yes, you know. So, but I want to talk about the high school years. You know, that was awkward years for me. Really, it was. You know, if you can remember back, you trying to find yourself. You trying to fit in. You know, you don't know what to wear, what to do. You know, you don't know whether to be this crowd, that crowd, or that crowd. You know, that was just the stress of school. You know,
and then you know.
Yes, it definitely was because you was trying to come, especially that ninth grade year. If you can remember that, especially that ninth grade year, that was a really awkward year for at least for me because I was really trying to, you know, not grown but trying to be grown in between.
Mm-hmm.
That stage year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Felicia, you can relate to that. So I have really enjoyed talking to you tonight, but I want you to share with the listening audience your social media and how they can purchase your book.
Okay. I mostly post on Instagram. It's going to be The Makings of Me book. So Makings has an S. It's The Makings of Me book. And on Facebook also, The Makings of Me book. Everything is the same. I didn't want people to have a hard time finding me, but everything is The Makings of Me book. The book only costs $14.99. The website also is www.themakingsofmebook. And I encourage everyone to get at least one copy so that you can see what you're sharing with the future. The importance of people filling out this book is to leave behind a piece of you to the people who would most want it. It's not saying here's a book with all my information. It's here's a piece of me for you to have to share with your child and then their child and their children to keep in the family. Here are the makings of me. Because you love me so much, you're going to want a piece of me. Here's a piece of me. So you fill it out. You dedicate it to who you want to have it. And when you're done, you give them the book. Here are the makings of me. I have one for my mother. I have one for my grandmother. And me and my husband both did a copy for my son. It's a nice way to share yourself with a person who you know is going to want it when you're not here anymore? Who's going to want those details, and who's going to say, I wish I had more details about such and such?
And you know, that's right, Felicia, because I was going to ask you to sum up, or if it was anything else you had to say. But I think you just said a mouthful. Get the book. You know, you said that you should get a copy for this person. I only got one, so I think I'm going to have to come back and get a few more so that I can actually, look, leave a piece of me with them. So
exactly,
I thank you for joining
exactly.
me here today on the Brownstone on the Voices of Hope Radio Network, and we'll be right back after this commercial break.
Okay, no problem.
Fail big. Today is the beginning of the rest of your life, so do what you feel passionate about. Take chances. Don't be afraid to fail. There's an old IQ test was 9 dots, and you had to draw 5 lines with a pencil within these 9 dots without lifting the pencil. The only way to do it was to go outside the box. Don't be afraid to think outside the box. Don't be afraid to fail big, to dream big. But remember, dreams without goals are just dreams, and they ultimately fuel disappointment. So have dreams, but have goals. And understand that to achieve these goals, you must apply discipline and consistency. You have to work at it every day. You have to plan every day. Hard work works.
Welcome back to the Brownstone, and I am your host, Tracy Brown. That's right. The commercial said hard work, and consistency works. So tonight, the second half of our show is very interesting. You know, we've been dealing a lot with, well, we've been in the house since March, so we've been dealing a lot with just life and things that happen. And, you know, we deal with stress in different ways. I mean, we deal with it. Some of us, you know, run and exercise. Some of us eat, however you deal with it. But sometimes when it becomes difficult when we have to manage the symptoms of depression, when you feel like your stress levels have reached this peak and you don't know what to do. We're going to talk about some things that you can do tonight. But I wanted to share with you this quick little story. Early this year, I was had the opportunity of watching CNN, and Taraji P. Actually was on there, and she actually opened up about the mental health in the Black community. And so during this time, you know, of COVID-19, her organization is actually providing virtual therapy to the Black community. So, and the name of her organization is Boris Lawrence Henson Foundation. So if you feel like you're stressed and you just can't deal with things, make sure that you go to that website. It's www.borishensonfoundation.org. And Taraji P. thing is simple. She believes that no one should have to suffer alone and that we all are in this together. So I have the opportunity of bringing on and speaking with tonight Kim Leslie Underwood, the mental health strategist. And so I want to know, Kim, are you in the brownstone? Are you around about? You walking around? I hear some noise out there, but are you in the brownstone?
I'm in the brownstone. You know, when I visit the brownstone, I got to check out the room because, you know, you and Walter be doing some new stuff all the time. Y'all just so creative up in here. New music, new sound, new, the wonderful, you know, I was just hanging out in for a few, so I'm here.
You're here, you're here. Well, you know what, I'm going to take this time to welcome you back to the brownstone, but, you know, actually, you're at home. So tonight we want to talk about, I want to talk about you a little bit simply because, you know, you are a mental health strategist. And I want to know, what's the role of a mental health strategist? Just help me out just a little bit.
Okay. All right. So a mental health strategist is someone like myself who sees the need of others. And my goal is to help you, right, assist you, encourage you to open up your Pandora box. And oftentimes we don't want to look inside of the box, of the jar, even open up a letter, right? So, and the reason why...
You know, you just got to love our new technology. I think that Kim may have just slipped into one of the other rooms, or she's just sitting in that, you know, that position. There she is. There she's back with us.
Right.
So you were telling us about.
I'm sorry. I don't know what happened to the mic, but I'm back, y'all. I'm here. What part do we?
You were actually telling me, because one of my questions was actually, why would I need a mental health strategist? And you were telling me about opening up those Pandora boxes. So that's where we are.
Right. So when you open up that Pandora box, you don't want to be alone. You need someone who you can confide in. You need someone to help you navigate you and looking into the content that's there. So that's my job, that's my role, that's my compassion, to help anyone who's ready to open up their Pandora box so that they can become them authentic self. And let me just take a step back, because everybody's not ready. So there are clients that I may run into, when I say run into by accident or by maybe a referral, they know that there's something that is missing. There's something going on. They just can't put their finger on it, right? So those are, I would say, my ambivalent clients, right? And these are the ones that I'm there just coaching them and trying to build up self-esteem and awareness and get them to the point, so you know what, darling, let me just do this. This is what I've been really dealing with, or just help them have some clarity of what really is. So I deal with those clients that are ambivalent. I deal with the clients who are ready and those who want to maintain their authentic self. So it's the three levels of a mental health strategist, and I'm so thankful and grateful for those who allow me to be a part of their journey. I don't take that lightly. It's an honor to be a part of someone's journey and to see them unleash some things and discover some things and breathe again, feel again, love again, trust again. Oh, my God, I could go on and on. But it's rewarding. It's beneficial. And I'm just so thankful that I'm chosen to do this job today.
Well, you know, you brought up some key points in that sentence because you simply said that we have to be ready. And that's a key point there, because if we're not ready, we're not going to reap the benefits of having a mental health strategist, reap the benefits of having her, having you to walk through us opening up that Pandora's box, you know, unpacking it, dealing with all the issues that are there, simply just dealing with life. So I'm excited that you're on the air tonight with me, that you stopped by the Brownstone, but we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
You know, I have my foundation, Boyce Lawrence Henson Foundation, and we are starting a campaign because, you know, I know people are struggling mentally with this whole deal, and especially underserved communities. So we're trying to raise money to help people seek help. I can pick up a phone and call my therapist because I can afford it, but most people can't. So we're starting a campaign to raise money for the COVID-19 pandemic to help others who can't help themselves. And so what we need you to do is just text No Stigma to 707070, and you can make any amount of donation. Anything helps. We're just trying to help people because, you know, the mental is a little, it's suffering right now. I have my good days, I have my bad days, so I'm just trying to help the best way I can.
Wow, Tracy, that's really powerful. I commend Rodney Henderson. I really do. That is amazing. I thank God for her acknowledging mental health, acknowledging that there is a need for those who want help, need the help, that they have the opportunity to get the help. So I'm thankful. Even yesterday was Mental Health World Day, and I thank God for the WHO Foundation. Shout out to the WHO Foundation who acknowledged centuries ago in reference to us being more aware of our mental state. It's so important for us to acknowledge where we are, assess ourselves on a daily basis, so that if we need help, that we have the resources available. So shout out to Tajri P. Henderson. Thank you so much
and
for that.
And the key thing that she said there is no stigma. No stigma.
No stigma.
Because it could be, because one day it could be you. It could be me. And I believe that in all of us, we deal with a little bit of mental health issues. You know, it's not a bad thing. Life happens, and that's what this is all about, especially when we're in this COVID-19 thing now. I'm quite sure that you have learned some things about yourself, being cooped up in the house, being however your situation may be, but you've learned some things about yourself. You face something. You open that Pandora box that our mental health strategist talked about. But I'm excited tonight because she's gonna give us some important keys. So I'm going to sit back and give the floor back to her as she talks about these keys to help us to become a better you.
Well, thank you so much. And I appreciate you acknowledging the need for us to receive services, the support that we need. And one of the things that Taji said, that there is no stigma. You know, back in the day, growing up for me, and I'll say back in the day, I ain't going to go all the way back with y'all tonight, but, you know, what I came through was whatever happened in the house stayed in the house. Whatever I was feeling was not supposed to be discussed. I remember going through a change in my life as a woman, and I was very young. And Tracy, when I went to my mother, she, you know, because she didn't know, right? It was going back in the time, back in the early, in the late 2000s, right? So in 1999, I was going through perimenopause, and I was going through these feelings, and my mom, I'm talking to my mother, and she's like, girl, you're too young for that. So immediately what she was doing, not knowing in a way, was she was shutting down what I was experiencing. She was shutting down how I was feeling. I was scared, number one, because there was an unexpected feeling. There were something happening in my body, and I had no longer control over. But because of the field that I was in currently, I knew how to go to my resources. So when we talk about keys, one of the first things that I want to tell you, I want to encourage you, and I'm going to reiterate throughout this show tonight, is don't be afraid to open your Pandora box. You'll be surprised at what you will discover. Don't be afraid to face the unknown. I was afraid to face the unknown. I was afraid to hear what a doctor was going to tell me. But when I was ready, I was grateful, because then I knew how to handle what my next level of my life was. So we can't be afraid to open up that Pandora box. We can't be afraid to read what's in the content, whether it's a letter, whether you open it up and you see this album book. Don't be afraid to ask people the questions like, who's this? And why is this person with mommy? And where's that? Like, we have to start asking these questions and pray that God will send you to the right person that's going to help answer your questions and give you the truth, right? Number two is accept what you see. Accept how you're feeling in that moment. Deal with the experience. Like, this is not, you know, let me go back to the Pandora. Do you know what the Pandora box stands for, Tracy?
No, I'm going to allow you to tell me. I'm going to allow you to tell me tonight.
All right. Let me get a sip of this tea over here. This is just good company. I like hanging out in here. Okay, so the Pandora box is an expression. And what it stated was, there was this woman, amen, that opened up this box, and it was known to have unforeseen, unpleasant content inside. And it was really a Greek myth. But when I look at that, you know, a lot of times when we talk about, you know, oh, you go in there, you're going to open up that Pandora box. Why shouldn't I? I need to know what's inside. I know what I need to know, what made me who I am. You know, where do I get this personality, my temperament, my likes and dislikes? Why do I have some of these medical conditions, these mental health conditions? You know, I was fine last year. I was fine 2 months ago. So where did this all of a sudden come in? And, you know, the doctor's pulling and asking me all these questions. So you need to open up the box. But you need to have a mental health strategist. You need to have someone that's going to coach you. Someone is going to encourage you. Someone's going to sit there and allow you to lean on their shoulder and cry and not judge you, because it has to be a no judgment zone there, right? Number two, Tracy, is that we're talking about the keys. I told you what it is. So now we can move on to the keys. Number two is accept what you see and feel. That I want to reiterate. You have to accept what you're feeling in that moment, because that feeling is real. You need to go through the experience of what's taking place now that you have opened up the Pandora box, right? Because in that process, what you once thought that was unhealthy will be converted over to being healthy. It's going to be good for you. I'm telling you, it's going to be good. Trust me. Number three, Tracy, is this is the final key. And I want y'all to take all the keys, but if you don't take anything else, please take this key. And it's a statement, more like a key, but I want you to take it as a key, all right? I want you to write it down, put it on your refrigerator, put it, you know, paste it on your mirror in the bathroom. These are the places where we usually frequent. True freedom comes when we no longer need to be validated by others. Oh, my God. Knowing your personality, your temperament, your likes, your dislikes, your thoughts, your feelings, all will contribute to you defining who you are. It will unleash you from living in a cage, living in a box, living beneath your privileges, living on other opinions of you. So if you don't take anything else, Tracy, I hope that your listeners really key in to taking the third key on tonight, because I desire for you to be free, to live whole, and to accept yourself as you are, who you are. But these keys are important for all of us to take in tonight, especially when we are in this pandemic. We shut down. Life has changed. It is not how it used to be. This is a new norm for all of us, and we all have to adjust. And this is the way that we adjust. We have to hold on to some keys. We have to become strategically in the things that we do, because it's going to help us. It's going to stabilize our mental health. It's going to help us to see above our situation and be able to handle what is ahead of us. So hopefully I've been a blessing to your audience tonight, Tracy.
You have been totally a blessing. But, you know, it's just not that simple when you come to the brownstone. You always know I have a bunch of questions. But one thing, my first question is, and, you know, I was busy sipping on that good old tea at the brownstone, was I did not get the first key. So what was the first key, if you don't mind repeating that for me?
Absolutely not, because that tea is good. Thank you so much. Don't be afraid to open your Pandora box. You will be surprised at what you will discover. That's the first key. The first that you have to accept. You have to accept that this here box is before you. You know, this envelope that you've been putting to a side. You know, sometimes we get mail, right? And you see who it's from and you just throw it to the side. You got to open up the envelope. And the longer that it takes for you to open it up, Tracy, the longer it's going to prevent you from discovering who you are, from you accomplishing your goals. That Pandora box is there to unleash you from whatever has been holding you back from becoming you.
Well, I thank you for that, because there's a lot of things that I need to get in to my listening audience, because our time is running down, questions that I have. But one of the statements you made, and I also grew up on that statement, that what happens in the house stays in the house. And I used to think that that was a good statement, but there's a lot of stuff that happens in the house. We're talking about incest. We're talking about drugs. We're talking about mental and physical abuse. All this stuff happens in the house. So I no longer like to use that phrase, what happens in the house stays in the house. And I think the second thing is simply that we all have a Pandora's box. We all have that little box that we have to open up. It may be little, it may be big, but we have that Pandora box that we have to open, and we should open. And what happens is that once you open that Pandora's box, then you have to accept what you said, accept what you see and feel. That's a key point right there. You have to accept what you see. This is what it is. That's how it looks. That's what's in that box. Good, bad, indifferent, look good, ugly, whatever it is, you got to accept what you see. But not only that point, that you have to also accept how you feel. You got to accept how you feel. And a lot of times we don't want to accept how we feel. We don't want to accept it because we've been taught not to accept some things, or we've been able to suppress some things, but we don't want to accept it. So we got to accept what we see, and we got to accept what we feel in order to do this. And so once we do this, this is what I'm hearing you saying, that we can get true freedom comes, and we understand that we don't need other people to validate us. And that's a key point, because a lot of us live on what other people think of us, how they make us feel, what they say, is it right, is it wrong. No, true freedom comes when you don't need others to validate you. So I thank you for those keys tonight. I thank the listening audience for tuning in. And I want to ask you, is there anything else you want to say before we go to a quick commercial break?
if you feel the need, if you feel the need that you need some help, there are resources out there. And I'm just going to give you a simple three numbers, 311, because that you can use in any state, wherever you call and where your listeners from. Call 311 and they will connect you to providers. And what's great about it right now, because we are with this pandemic, Tracy, is that you can have a provider right on the line. You can have someone just do telehealth with you. So you don't even have to leave your home, you know, if you feel like, you know, somebody's going to prejudge me, somebody might see me going into the clinic. You can actually get services in the comfort of your own home today.
Yeah, and that's the key thing about it. You can get the services in the comfort of your own home. Reach out. Don't go through this alone. Don't worry about it being a stigma. It's okay to talk to a therapist. It's okay to have a rough and a bad day. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to be right back.
Police brutality, not on our watch. Poor healthcare, no sir. Our voting system is broken. It changes when we change it. We rise up as one. We speak out for our black lives. In 2020, we show up to the polls. Your vote is your microphone. So get in the booth and turn yours up.
Well, we've come to that time where it's the end of the show, and I want to thank our guest tonight for coming on the Brownstone. We have Felicia Harris, the making of me, and our mental health strategist, none other than Kim Leslie Underwood. But the main person I want to thank is my listening audience for joining me here tonight. So remember to join us on social media. Remember to go to Facebook and like the Brownstone page. Remember to go and click on the Voices of Hope Radio Network page. Just remember to do all those things. And once again, I am your host, Tracy Brown. And until next week, have a great weekend.